It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. West Virginians, like many throughout the United States, are increasingly coping with the realities of Alzheimer's.
And I am a caregiver. I mean, you've changed from wife to caregiver. I mean, I don't get hugs. That kills me. I don't get hugs.
We'll have that story coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. A former West Virginia Department of Commerce secretary, forced out of his job last year, will challenge his old boss for the governor's seat. As Dave Mistich reports, businessman Woody Thrasher announced he's running for the Republican nomination for governor in 2020.
Thrasher and his father founded Bridgeport-based engineering firm The Thrasher Group in 1983. The business has since grown to about 700 employees and 11 offices across 7 states. The primary challenge will make for a race to watch between two West Virginia business moguls who have both been wrapped up in controversy during their time in public service. Thrasher resigned from his post as Commerce Secretary in June 2018 at the request of Governor Jim Justice amid news of a mishandled flood recovery program. Justice's campaign, which recently tapped a former Trump state director to run the governor's 2020 re-election bid, quickly responded to Thrasher's announcement. They criticized his time in the Justice administration. West Virginia's primary election will be held Tuesday, May 12, 2020. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich.
The heart of a Catholic saint toured through West Virginia during this Catholic Holy Week. It was in Charleston Monday and Wheeling yesterday. Glennis Board reports.
The saint's heart is on display in a special case and is considered incorrupt, meaning it's resisted normal decay. Saint Jean Vianney lived and worked in the small farming community of Ars, France. Toward the end of his life, he would hear confessions for 18 hours a day. He died August 4th, 1859, at the age of 73, and is now the patron saint of parish priests. The Knights of Columbus, the world's largest Catholic fraternal organization, are sponsoring the relic pilgrimage called The Heart of a Priest through the United States. The pilgrimage started in November and will run through June 2019. The organization hopes the pilgrimage inspires, quote, healing within the heart of the church and an increase of holy vocations to the priesthood. The priest's heart is on loan from the shrine of Ars, France. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Glynis Board in Wheeling.
April is Autism Awareness Month. The Autism Society introduced the month-long awareness campaign in 1970. But today, many advocates are working to reclaim April as Autism Acceptance Month to celebrate autism. As WFPL's Liz Schlimmer reports, it's a movement led by autistic individuals.
What's up, Cam? How are you?
Not much. Hello.
Every Sunday, roommates Emma Johnson and Micah Peace invite about a dozen of their 20-something-year-old friends to their Germantown home for dinner. It's a diverse crowd, or more specifically, this group of friends is neurodiverse. Peace and Johnson are both autistic, and so are some of the guests at their breakfast-themed dinner party.
We're going to come together, and it's going to be probably a little loud. There's going to be a lot of smells because, I mean, you can smell the bread. I'm making French toast casserole, so there's going to be a lot of maple syrup in the air.
Johnson says all those smells and sounds can lead to sensory overload for her and their guests.
This is not a sensory-friendly experience.
They might need to be left alone or need to move around and fidget their bodies, called stimming, to feel calm again. Autism can mean very different things for different people, but it generally includes difficulty with communication and sensory processing.
But what we have done is say things like, hey, if you ever need to just step outside, it's not going to be weird. I'm not going to think anything bad of you. If you need us to turn down the volume, it's like not a big deal.
In a simple way, by building this tradition, Johnson and Peace are celebrating autism acceptance every week. April is the month dedicated to autism awareness, but Peace dreads it.
It's hard for me, and it's hard for a lot of my autistic friends, too, and in a lot of ways. I used to ride the bus past this house every day, and in April they would hang this horrid, just this really ugly flag. And it was like an American flag, but puzzle pieces.
The National Autistic Society adopted a puzzle piece logo in 1963, and it's become a common symbol for autism. But some autistic people, including Peace, question what it stands for.
Actually, the original one featured a crying child on the puzzle piece to communicate how confusing and puzzling and tragic this condition is, supposedly. And it implies that we're missing a piece of something that makes people human.
To be clear, some autistic people embrace the puzzle piece and ascribe different meaning to it. Peace acknowledges that it's possible for the symbol to be reframed as something positive.
But we're not there yet.
The symbolism around autism awareness has a complicated history. Autism was first recognized in the 1960s, and for decades, psychiatrists and parents of autistic children were the most vocal mouthpieces for autism awareness. Some advocacy groups called autism an epidemic, portraying it as a problem to fix. Peace doesn't see autism as a disorder, but as a different way of interacting with the world.
Autism isn't a mental illness. It's a neurological way that a person is wired. It's a type of brain.
Heidi Cooley Cook serves autistic individuals and their families at U of L's Kentucky Autism Training Center and has worked in the field of disability services for 17 years. She says the public messages about autism are changing.
In the past, there was definitely discussion of cures and of causes and wanting to stop autism. And that, along with language, is also definitely shifting.
Cooley Cook says many people who have been diagnosed with autism now prefer to be referred to as autistic, like an identity, rather than saying he or she is a person who has autism.
And we're seeing that spread not just with adults, but also with adolescents, as well as families with young children who are on the spectrum, identifying with identity first language versus person first language, and reclaiming autism as something to be celebrated.
Autistic individuals like Peace and Johnson are also spreading that positive attitude toward autism as they work to rebrand April as Autism Acceptance Month. Peace and Johnson say they can't speak for all autistic people. So I asked what acceptance means to them. Here's Peace first.
Acceptance is an action, whereas awareness is much more passive.
Accepting that I can be autistic and you don't even need to feel any type of way about that. Like, I just need you. I would like to shoot for a straight neutral.
While they may be waiting for the rest of the world to catch up, the two friends say they found acceptance in each other and their own circle of friends. I'm Liz Schlemmer in Louisville.
The rate of Alzheimer's is increasing in every state of the union. Researchers, including some at WVU, are working on a cure, but understanding what causes Alzheimer's is still poorly understood, let alone reversing or stopping it. And as Carol Lofton reports, there's no end in sight for families struggling with the disease.
Carol Weir and her daughter Tracy Eddy live side by side in homes on a quiet street in Marietta, Ohio. Carol's husband of 46 years, Tracy's dad, has Alzheimer's.
And I am a caregiver. I mean, you've changed from wife to caregiver. I mean, I don't get hugs. That kills me. I don't get hugs. He doesn't have the emotion that he used to, you know, it's just really hard.
Keith Weir first began displaying symptoms of Alzheimer's 12 years ago in his late 60s. At first, he couldn't remember his youngest grandchild's name. Then he began to forget where favorite restaurants were and stopped caring about his personal hygiene.
I don't understand Alzheimer's at all. Like, you'll have one day that he seems just fine, and the next day he doesn't know. He can't even pick up his fork. Part of the time he can, and part of the time he can't. So
every day when you wake up, you don't know what you're waking up to.
You're right. I don't.
Alzheimer's is an incredibly difficult disease. People with it can live as long as 20 years after diagnosis. During that time, they become increasingly dependent on loved ones for care. You might have heard of someone forgetting how to get home or go to the grocery store they've been frequenting their entire life. But they also may forget to eat or if they've taken their medicine. And eventually, memories of loved ones begin to pass too. Mark Hout is director of clinical research at the Rockefeller Neuroscience Institute.
It takes a lot to care for somebody who has Alzheimer's disease. And it is very draining. It is a really hard task and job to do. Because typically you're caring for somebody who means the most to you in the world, and you're watching them change in front of you, and not only is it physically draining, but it can be emotionally draining seeing that person change in front of you that you cared so much about and who's no longer becoming that person that you know.
More than 37,000 West Virginians are living with Alzheimer's, according to the Alzheimer's Association, and it's the seventh leading cause of death in West Virginia, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which Howe says may not accurately represent the disease's impact on the state.
So that might be a counting problem.
Howe says that people who live in rural areas have less access to health care and have higher risk factors that cause vascular problems in the brain, such as high blood pressure, obesity, high cholesterol, and coronary artery disease.
We know those run very, very high in this state. And those aren't the cause of Alzheimer's disease, but when you get those factors combined with the genetic risk, it seems to bring it out more.
Howe is part of a team at West Virginia University running a clinical trial to see if ultrasound could be used to treat early Alzheimer's. But Howe says it's hard to treat the disease when scientists still aren't 100% sure how it actually works.
It's a really complex disease, and we don't know the basic causes and how the mechanisms actually work to produce the symptoms.
The not knowing is super difficult for families like Tracy Eddy and Carol Ware, though.
You want to take your coat off?
I guess I can. Let me see, I don't have anything else to take off.
Well, no. You don't take it all off.
Oh, well.
We'll take your hat off.
Here, Carol.
Every day, Keith goes to an adult daycare in Marietta, which Carol says is a lifesaver for her.
I don't know if I could keep him at home if he didn't have that, because I would probably be nuts.
When he comes home, though, Carol says he's worse than he is at daycare, sometimes pacing around the house, saying he's got to do something, but unsure what.
And I don't know why. I don't know why he's worse with me than he is with other people. That's one thing I never understand, but they say the caretaker gets the blunt end of everything.
Last year, Keith was put on hospice.
About once a month, you get a break.
Well, I did when he was on hospice. They had him on hospice for 6 months, and I got 5 days every month. But now they took him off hospice because he hadn't declined enough physically. So now it's just when I put him in, I have to pay.
There are some services available in Ohio for respite. But in a later phone conversation, Carol's daughter Tracy said the ones they've tried to get, Carol has just been over the income guideline for. She also said even with help from the Alzheimer's Association, navigating what resources are available is really challenging, and it's possible there are resources available they haven't been able to figure out. Or maybe not. The current plan is to keep Keith home as long as possible and hope a spot comes open in a VA nursing home before Carol can't take care of him any longer. If one doesn't, Tracy said Carol plans to spend her savings down so Keith qualifies for Medicaid. Howe again.
You know, the phrase we use a lot is, you can't take care of so-and-so unless you take care of yourself. That's really easy for us to say as healthcare providers, and we know it's really hard for families to be able to do that because somebody's got to be there. Sometimes somebody's got to be there 24/7. So who's going to go to the store? Who's going to go pick up the prescriptions? How is that stuff going to happen? And so having that kind of respite and backup and stuff like that, particularly if you live a mile off the hard road, as some people do in West Virginia, makes it really challenging.
In West Virginia, the Bureau for Senior Services runs a program called Family Alzheimer's In-Home Respite that provides up to 16 hours a week of respite care for families on a sliding fee scale. There are also some federal programs that provide respite. But for people like Tracy and Carol, who spend years of their lives caring for a loved one with Alzheimer's, programs like this just aren't enough. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Carol Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health and Charleston Area Medical Center. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.